Welcome back to Chronology, your episode-by-episode recap of WWF Monday Night Raw. From episode one until the Christmas lights in my studio here burn out, which I don't think will ever happen.
Hopefully you bought those LEDs, Dave.
I did. They are LEDs. I'm Dave Thackera. That other voice you just heard, his name is Neil Trauma. I'm a casual wrestling fan. Neil knows everything that there is to know about the business. How are you, Neil?
Oh, I'm doing just Skippy.
Fantastic. We are going to talk today about episode, I believe it's 17. It might be 16.
Sure, let's just go with 17.
Sure.
I'm sure there was one in there that doesn't really count.
Episode 17, which took place May 17th. 1993. Now, that's a time in our lives when Bill Clinton was still very much president of the United States. It was a couple of days after, not only, and these names are going to mean a lot to you, Neil, it was a couple of days after Romelu Lukaku was born. He's a Belgian football superstar who currently plays with Inter Milan in Italy, as you well know. And also a couple of days after Miranda Cosgrove was born, she's Carly from iCarly on Nickelodeon.
Well, now, I know my way around the Disney Channel, so I'm not sure about these Nickelodeon shows. And I didn't know they had football in Belgium. Is he a linebacker?
He's as big as a linebacker.
Okay.
Let's just put it that way.
That's all I need to know.
So that's what happened in the real world. But in the WWF world, Neil, who's got the belts and what are we talking about?
Well, we are beginning the really hard push here, less than 1 month to go until the King of the Ring, the new WWF pay-per-view that is going to be debuting for them here in 1993. And headlining that show, as we'll talk about later when we get to Mean Gene Okerlund and the King of the Ring report, is WWF champion Hulk Hogan, who we haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of since he won the title at WrestleMania, having a rematch against the man he beat for the title, the 500-pound Yokozuna. But the real man of the hour here on Raw is Shawn Michaels, the Intercontinental Champion. He's the guy these shows are built around, and he's going to be a major factor in tonight's episode of Raw.
We start the episode confirming once again that this is a live episode of Raw, and you can already see Vince McMahon fully erect as we jump on the air. We've got Macho Man, we've got Bobby the Brain Heenan, and not only do we have the usual macho outfit watch, this time he's in a tastefully decorated red and black Eddie Murphy on Delirious kind of outfit, but we also get bonus footage of Macho Man wearing a green and purple ensemble as they were highlighting his work that he made an appearance at the Special Olympics cheering on a weightlifting champion. So good for Macho doing a little community outreach. I'm proud of him.
Wow, not one but two Macho Man outfits. What a day to be alive.
We started the episode with Lord Alfred hinting about the fact that someone is here and someone is in disguise. Neil, will that factor into today's episode?
Oh, we'll find out. Yes, someone here in disguise. That's some quality reporting by Lord Al, I gotta say.
We start very much with action in the ring. Match number one. We get some jobber who you say looks like a woman, whose name is Tony Vada, pairing up with Glenn Ruth against Neil. We finally get the smoking guns.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed because it means we don't get the smoking gun vignettes anymore, man.
Oh.
I must note that the guns here in their introduction shoot off guns. Literally, they shoot guns off in the middle of the ring here inside at the Manhattan Center. No doubt in violation of about 14 New York City ordinances. But nevertheless, Bart and Billy make their in-ring debut. They've got guns. They've got jeans. They've got awesome mullets. They have ridiculous porn stashes. The smoking guns are my new favorite part of Raw.
Yeah, this must have been really traumatizing for a lot of younger wrestling fans because they're just watching their stepdad in the ring. It's awkward. Mom's new boyfriend is on screen tagging up with mom's other new boyfriend.
Yeah, he's just missing the 12-pack of Jenny Light.
Well, the guns did win. Surprise, surprise. But their finishing move in this match, to me, made me cringe. It was a pile driver, and Tony Vada, we're not going to talk about him anymore, but Tony looked like dude got dropped on his head and his neck bent. I want you to go back and watch the finish of this episode because it's quite possibly the closest thing to an in-ring paralysis that never actually turned into an in-ring paralysis.
Well, you know, now I'm a little bit worried because in your notes, you say it was Glenn Ruth that took the move. Now, if it was Ruth, we know he lives because he goes on to be Headbanger Thrasher. If it was Tony Vieta, I don't know if we ever see him again. So the smoking guns may have actually murdered him in the ring.
Well, if they did, they swept him out of the ring very quietly. And even though it was live, we never heard anything else about it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, Dave. I actually didn't bump on this, so I may have looked away from the screen at the end. That does not remain their finishing move. Of course, they end up using the Sidewinder, which is definitely safer than whatever the hell they did to this jobber. So hopefully Vince saw this and was like, guys, we're going to come up with something else from now on. My workman's comp insurance can't handle this. Oh, wait a minute. Never mind. They're not employees. They're not covered under workman's comp insurance. Silly me.
No, they're independent contractors who have no legal standing whatsoever. They're just lucky to be in the building and not kicked out.
Yeah.
After this match, we get to what would turn into part one of the highlight of the entire episode. And overall, we should say we crap on a lot of these early episodes of Raw, but this particular episode of Raw, I liked it.
Yeah, I was going to mention this during the recap, but I will note here, spoiler alert to everyone, that way back in the day when we first started this podcast, we had a lot of stinkers in those first couple months of Raw. And I know I kept telling you, Dave, just hang in there. By the spring, it gets better. This in particular is the episode I have in mind. This episode does rank, you know, if you were to, you know, poll a lot of wrestling fans, like longtime dorks like me that know every episode of Raw, this is generally like a top 10, top 15 all-timer as far as episodes of Raw. This is a really good show. And yeah, it Shawn Michaels comes to the ring, kind of setting the stage for what would happen on Raw, you know, for the next 30 years. Arrogant Champ comes out for an interview, lays out an open challenge, and lo and behold, we end up booking our main event right there. Dave, tell him what happens. Who comes out to accept the challenge?
None other than the man who once got super kicked through a plate glass window in the barbershop, Marty Jannetty. Like the actual Marty Jannetty, Shawn Michaels' former tag team partner in the Rockers. I was floored by this. I had no idea Marty Jannetty was A, even alive, or B, even connected with the company. So this dude who's in disguise, I thought was just going to be like Mr. Perfect or something, because we already saw footage today of Shawn Michaels feuding with Mr. Perfect. I'm like, oh, it's going to be Mr. Perfect in disguise. He's going to come to the ring. He's going to accept it. But no, it was my man. It was Marty Jannetty. It was something that was totally a shock to me.
Yeah, I'm glad this was a legit shock to you. And yeah, it was a shock at the time because Marty had been fired or at least sent home for a while to deal with his, quote, personal demons after their pretty disappointing match at the Royal Rumble, which was, you know, just sort of an afterthought in the beginning of Raw because that was happening right around the same time Raw was booting up. But yeah, definitely a shocker here. And as we'll get to later, the shocks don't end here as far as Marty Jannetty accepting the title match.
No, Lord Alfred was right. There's someone in disguise. It's Marty Jannetty. They have a wasting time promo. It seemed to take a long time to get there. The promos on Raw would get a lot better. There was a lot of discussion of whether Marty could have a title shite or not because he didn't have his proper boots on or his wrestling gear. So we're talking about outfits. And, well, Shawn Michaels eventually accepts the challenge. It's booked. We will have an IC title match later in the episode. I'm so pumped. But before we get there, we have to get to another Shawn Michaels rogues gallery villain. None other than Razor Ramon.
Yeah, so Razor Ramon comes out here for a squash match against that. Remember I told you they signed that indie goofball, that Lightning Kid, and you know they just have him being a jobber every single week. He comes out here, he loses to somebody. So here he is in the ring. This week he's just the kid, and he's in there to get squashed by Razor Ramon. That is what happened, right, Dave?
Absolutely not. This is live. This is uncut. This is uncensored. And while Razor beat him up pretty good, the kid, who would be christened in this match right here, the 1-2-3 kid, because he got the 1-2-3 with a very quick roll-up, and Sean Waltman, the kid, the Lightning Kid, the Suicide Kid, the Kamikaze Kid, the 1-2-3 kid, is victorious.
Yeah, the moonsault off the top hits Razor, ends up, cradling him to get the win. One of the most famous moments from the early days of Raw. Anything can happen on Raw. You never know when some random jobber can go out there and beat a big star like Razor Ramon. Really, this is one of the most famous matches in Raw history because it was such a shocker at the time. They really never did this, have jobbers just beat a big star. And now they would do it other times in the future. It never had the same effect as this. just a great storyline overall. The kid beats Razor. Suddenly he is a pushed wrestler now as the 1-2-3 kid. And this just really just a great segment all around.
Can we call him a jobber, though? This is a guy who would have, like, a decade-plus run in the company. Is it fair to call him a jobber at
this
point?
Well, no, but he was a jobber up to that point, is my point. They were presenting him on TV as a jobber. Now, if you knew anything, obviously, you would kind of have got the idea that there was going to be something more, because they actually would talk about him before the matches and saying, hey, here's this kid. We've seen him the last couple weeks. He keeps changing his name. He keeps losing. Normally, it's like Tony Vieja, and we give so little of a crap about him that he almost dies in the ring and I don't even notice. Like, that's usually how they treat the jobbers, but obviously they were going to do something more with the kid. But as far as his presentation on TV, yeah, he was just a kid that went out there and lost every week, and you know, here he picks up the win. So, you know, cool storyline going on here, you know, with the kid. And will he get more upsets, or will he go back to his losing ways? I guess we'll find out as weeks go on.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of a guy who had a lengthy run with the company, we get to match number 3 with none other than Tatanka, still unbeaten at this point, going against Scotty Too Hotty.
Yeah, Scott Taylor, another one of these jobbers here on this week's show. They'd all go on to greater fame in the Attitude Era. We had Headbanger Thrasher in the opener. Now we have Scotty Too Hotty here yet again. And I mean, of course he gets beat up, because one big problem is he does some racially insensitive taunting to start the match. So Tatanka kicks his ass. But I bumped on this. Did you notice this? They're talking about these King of the Ring qualifiers. If you remember last week, they actually booked a big match for the weekend, one of the weekend syndicated shows, Tatanka against Giant Gonzalez. Then they kind of just blow off the fact that Tatanka qualified for the King of the Ring, which means apparently he beat the Giant Gonzalez. I've never seen the match. I don't know what happens. I presume it's like a count out that maybe like the Undertaker's gong hits and Gonzalez like goes to the back to chase him and Tatanka wins that way. I can't imagine they had Tatanka pin the Giant Gonzalez, but who knows? Apparently he beat him over the weekend and we get no more information on that. But what we do get information on, Dave, is toilet paper. Are you paying attention
Bobby
to the
Brain
Heenan discussion?
Bobby the Brain is really getting, he's crossing a whole lot of broadcasting lines here. Not only ruining the aesthetic of this match, because he was talking about how quick the count was in the previous match with the 1-2-3 kid and with Razor Ramon. I mean, what announcer would do that? Bring up a past wrestling match in the middle of this one. But then he starts talking about toilet paper, like literally toilet paper.
And he see, you know, there was a poll, you know, 40-some% of Americans or something, 80% of Americans put the toilet paper on the thing ups, I don't know, whatever, on the top or instead of on the bottom. And then he talks about the percentage of people that use toilet paper in a certain fashion, which, I mean, Dave, let me ask you, we do Let Me Ask You every week. Are you, sir, a wrapper, a folder, or a crumbler?
Well, Bobby, I never actually thought about it
points
before.
Out the percentages.
I never actually thought about it before, but I guess I'm a crumbler.
You know, I'm a crumbler too. I had you pegged as a folder. I don't know. You seemed like a bit of a folder to me, but I guess not. All right, we should move on. We spent enough on toilet paper.
No surprise to anybody. Tatanka wins this match, and because I started watching Dances with Wolves on Netflix again, I know that Tatanka means buffalo.
Yes, and so if you ever listen to that WWF wrestling album, that WrestleMania album from the 90s, you will hear a whole song sung by Tatanka where Native Americans chant Tatanka Buffalo for 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
That's something that I will not do today, but thank you for bringing it up anyway. Well, this is a push towards the King of the Ring. We now have what used to be the highlight of Raw, but now after this episode is definitely not. We have the King of the Ring report with my man, with Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Hulk and Yoko for the championship. I think that was announced already, right? I don't remember for sure, but that is going to be the title match. Then there's the tournament, which, as Mean Gene points out, this King of the Ring tournament is so big. They're talking about it on the news, and they're writing about it in the newspaper.
And for you younger listeners out there, the newspaper was what they used to print out before the internet was around.
It was kind of like Reddit, only it came to your house on paper.
20 hours after everything already happened.
I also think Mean Gene might have been full of crap. I don't think they wrote about this in the newspaper, but you know what, Dave? I think you should research it and go to the library, get up the microfilm for all the major newspapers in America and find out how they were reporting on the qualifying matches for the King of the Ring. Can you do that homework this week?
I can try to do that, but if you ever besmirch Mean Gene Okerlund and call him a liar in my presence again, Neil, we're having words.
So we do have a tournament. It's Bret Hart against Razor Ramon, Hacksaw Duggan versus Bam Bam Bigelow, Lex Luger the Narcissist versus Tatanka, and then there's two more qualifying matches left, according to Mean Gene. Kamala versus Mr. Hughes this weekend. Great. Okay. And Shawn Michaels versus Crush. Now, something here doesn't make sense. And the longtime nerd in me knows what that is. Did you notice what doesn't make sense? Or should I just not spoil it yet?
The only thing I can think of is that during the match, Tatanka screamed out at Bam Bam Bigelow, like, that's going to be for you, Bam Bam. And that's not who he's supposed to be scheduled to meet up against during these qualifiers. Is that what we're talking about?
I could swear on last week's show, and I could be wrong here. Maybe I'm imagining this, but did they not promote Mr. Perfect versus Doink in a qualifying match? I'm almost positive they did, because I know that it happens. Like, I know this. I know that it happens. And then later on in the show, Vince McMahon is going to say something that makes this make even less sense. But okay, according to Mean Gene, there's two spots left in the tournament. Kamala versus Mr. Hughes, Shawn Michaels versus Crush. Just keep that in the back of your mind, and we'll talk about it at the end of the show.
Well, after that is done, we get match number four with, I can't believe we're still talking about this, but we are, Kamala, the Ugandan giant, taking on another racial stereotype in Yokozuna. Now, Neil, this is my favorite part of every episode. Let me ask you something. Yokozuna was just the champ, right? Just dropped the belt to Hulk Hogan a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, he was the champ for, about 3.5 minutes, but yes.
He's going to get another title shot at the very next pay-per-view. This is arguably the guy that they are pushing hardest right now, arguably. Maybe not true, but arguably. Why are they putting this man in a mid-card match with Kamala on Raw?
Well, I mean, I think it's just to build him up for the title match. I mean, you want to have him on TV beating someone. You don't want to just put him in there against a jobber, because then, you know, what's the big deal? And, well, I don't think they wanted to beat anyone that they were pushing seriously. So here you go, mid-card Kamala, and maybe, you know, it's kind of like monster fat guy against monster fat guy, and it's impressive. Kamala didn't take a lot of losses. For as much of a joke as he is here with what his gimmick is, and we've talked about that to death, and we don't need to talk about, you know, the Kamala gimmick and how offensive and ridiculous it was in 1993, but he was a push star, a star from the 80s, but a push star nonetheless, and Yokozuna pretty much squashes him here. So I think it's just the classic Vince McMahon formula that we're going to see for the next 30 years, which is when a guy is getting a big title match or maybe being set up to be the champion, you always have him beat a big giant monster. We're going to see this for years and years of, you know, the next big thing beating the Big Show on their way to their title match or whoever it may be. And I think Kamala is just that guy here. I don't think there's any more to read into it than that. I think they just wanted Yokozuna to get a win against a named guy. So they chose a big guy so that it would look even more impressive. And Yoko squashes Kamala here in 2 minutes. That's about as much as there
All
is
right,
to it.
Fair enough. Well, we do get match number five,
out,
the
though.
Match that you...
Wait, before match number five, I have to point this out. Did you know Vince on commentary saying that Yokozuna was gaining weight for the match, and reports have it that the Hulkster is leaning up for the title match?
Did you notice this?
Yeah, that's code for, I told Hulk to get off of steroids so I don't go to prison, by Vince McMahon right there. Hulk is leaning up. That means he's off the juice. And wait until you see Hulk at the King of the Ring, buddy. Oh, because we're watching the King of the Ring.
Together with a couple of Stone Cold Broken Skull Session ales.
Yeah. As soon as you're off of your doctor-prescribed painkillers, you're getting drunk and watching the King of the Ring, buddy.
Life goals. Hashtag life goals. Match number five. Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty for the IC title. The match that's been years in the making. Years and years and years in the making. And the match as a whole was pretty good. It was pretty fun. Again, I had no idea what was going to happen. Okay? All through the match,
They
kept bringing up the fact that the 1-2-3 kid already beat Razor Ramon on tonight's episode. Surprises happen all the time. We are live. We are uncut. You never know what's going to happen on Raw. And throughout all of that, I thought to myself, they're just saying that so that people will stick around so that when Shawn Michaels wins, we won't really like we'll still have the full audience. It's not like people are going to tune out going, yeah, it's a title match. Yeah, we know who's going to win, blah, blah, blah. But no!
Marty wins the title.
Marty Jannetty, a belted man, the Intercontinental Champion. I had no idea. I thought when he got super kicked through the window, my understanding was that we never saw or heard from him at all ever again. And
no way, man. Marty's going to stick around for a couple years here, but this is undoubtedly his crowning achievement, is winning this match on this episode of Raw for the title. Great match. And they would actually go on to have a rematch that is the match of the year for 1993, I think, in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. This is not that. A lot of people think this one is the one that won match of the year. It's not. But this is still a great match and actually one of my all-time favorite matches. Just a fun time and the shock ending. I mean, what more could you want out of a weekly wrestling television show than what we got here?
I know, because especially at the time, you didn't have the belt change hands very often at all. When you did have the belt change hands, any belt, it usually wasn't on the TV show. It usually was on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it was usually on the pay-per-view. Or honestly, a lot of times it was on a house show because house shows were still such a big part of the business at that time. And maybe you'd see highlights on TV. There were times when the championship would change and they would tell you, and then they would say, well, we're going to go back and watch the match from whatever, Halifax, Nova Scotia, years after. Like, Bret Hart just beat Ric Flair for the title a couple months before this on a house show in Saskatchewan that they had to show highlights of on TV and on Coliseum Video. But to have it happen on the TV show, you could undoubtedly count on one hand the number of times titles changed just on a show, mm-hmm. You know, on a TV show, because that's never what the TV shows were about. And from this point going forward, guess what? You could promote these title matches on TV and people would think, you never know what can happen. I might see the title change. So this is historic. For that reason, it's also historic, Dave, because if this were real, okay, imagine wrestling is a real sport.
It's not.
And we are commentators on that sport. We are analysts of that sport. This match kind of sets a horrible precedent for the next 30 years of pro wrestling. Because you always, you know, in theory, these guys get together. There's a championship committee. Maybe they meet with President Jack Tunney and they sign contracts and they set perimeters for the match. This sets the precedent that if some knucklehead challenges anyone in the back to a match, they can just come out and accept it. And we're going to throw the match on TV. No contract signed, nothing. And it's going to count and the title is going to change. And guess what, Dave? For the next 30 years, we see this happen on wrestling shows. People challenge each other to title matches. They're not sanctioned by the championship committee. You know, this is really a game changer for the wrestling industry. You know, it's like when they started letting those young whippersnappers in basketball do those slam dunks. Just changes the sport.
You're absolutely right. And I will get off your lawn right now.
This is a great episode of Raw. All-time great show. Any other thoughts on the show in general before I get to the Vince weirdness at the end?
No, not really. I mean, like you said, it was a great show. It was entertaining from start to finish, a couple of low points here and there. But overall, my lasting memories of this episode of Raw are going to be nothing but positive.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times we do these shows and we're hard on them. We're harsh on them because there's a lot of boring squash matches. But you do have to remember that we're reviewing 1993 shows, you know, using our 2021 brains and 2021 standards. And that's not even fair because the shows in 2021 are terrible. But, you know, the good shows that happen in between 93 and 2021 are in our mind. And we're judging them with those standards, which you really can't have because, you know, we're judging it by the standard of a show that hadn't even been invented yet, really. They were making this up as they go along. But this is a great show by any standards. A really fun hour of television, a really great 1 hour wrestling show. And then Vince McMahon at the end of it, he says, I don't guess you didn't notice this, Dave, that next week on Raw, we're going to have Mr. Perfect versus Doink in a King of the Ring qualifying match.
Okay.
What? We've announced that there's two spots left. We announced two different matches for the weekend, and now there's this one. So now I will spoil this a little bit. What I think happened was Mr. Perfect and Doink had a qualifying match. And I think it ended in some kind of a schmoz. It was either a count out or a DQ or something where they threw it out and said, now neither guy is in the tournament. So then they announced those other two matches. Now, just for the sake of, we try to keep this relatively spoiler free, except for the major, major news. Like, hey, this guy's going to die next week and we'll mention it. We try to stay pretty much spoiler free on here. So one of those two matches, I won't tell you which one, based on how I know the King of the Ring pay-per-view ends up being booked, one of those two matches I think also ends up in kind of a weird schmoz where it gets thrown out and then they plug Perfect and Doink back in. But I'm almost positive Vince let that slip because I think he forgot that those other two qualifying matches hadn't aired yet because they were probably taped weeks earlier in the taping cycle. And they usually do a live taped Raw at the same time. So he knew Perfect and Doink was coming up later that night in real life, even though it wasn't going to air until next week. And you could actually see it in Vince's eyes. If you go back and watch him, when he says Perfect and Doink in a King of the Ring match, you immediately see in his eyes that he knows he screwed up, but it's live TV. So we just move on. And thankfully, Vince is the boss, so he can't yell at himself in his headset over screwing up. But, go back and watch that with the knowledge you have. And if any of our listeners, you know what I'm hinting at and where this goes and what match doesn't happen at King of the Ring or what qualifying match doesn't end up being a qualifying match. You'll see it in his eyes. You'll know exactly what happened there. But just pretty funny to note here, 30 years later, when I know what happened, that Vince definitely screwed up in that last little tag on the end of the show.
Fair enough. Well, all that's left to do is to choose an MVP of the episode. And Neil, I know I'm going to go a little bit off the reservation here, but my MVP is Bobby the Brain Heenan, because without a doubt, this episode was fine and the action in the ring was great. But I thought that Bobby's announcing was the thing that really pushed it over the top. Throughout the entire episode, I thought he was an all-star. I thought he was exactly what everyone needed. And Bobby the Brain Heenan, to me, made this episode like a 9.9 out of 10.
Yeah, I can definitely get behind you on that. The announcing's really good on this one. I was going to go with like a Sean Marty tie just because that match is so great. But I think you did sell me on that because Bobby, he really puts over the 1-2-3 kid thing with Razor Ramon, putting over how, you know, it was a fast count. It wasn't fair. He puts over my thing about how the title match shouldn't be sanctioned and Sean and Marty shouldn't count. He does put over a lot of the stuff going on here. And I mean, Bobby's great. I'm the biggest Bobby the Brain Heenan fan you're ever going to find. So it doesn't take much arm twisting to convince me that Bobby should be the MVP. So I'll get behind you on that. Bobby the Brain, MVP of this
episode. Plus, he talked about toilet paper.
Well, and you certainly can't discount that.
This has been Chronology for episode 17. Thanks so much for joining us here. Neil, if people are interested in old wrestling show podcasts, where might they seek us out?
PlaceToBeNation.com. Not just wrestling, but they got podcasts about everything going on there right now at this point. You know, everything from, you know, old school wrestling, new wrestling, Marvel, there's comic books, there's TV reviews, movie reviews, everything you're going to find, anything pop culture that pertains to our generation, you're going to find covered with the Place to Be feeds. And you can get them, you know, all your usual places that you subscribe to podcasts, be it Apple or Spotify or, you know, whatever you use, Downcast, whatever you're using to get your podcast, you can find the whole Place to Be Nation and all those feeds. Literally more audio than you could possibly listen to in a week. So check us out there. You'll find us as one of the many podcasts that are going on there right now. And thanks for sticking with us through our hiatuses that we've had over the course of time. We're in this for the long haul, buddy. I'm pumped here after this great episode of Raw. We're doing all 30 years of these. I hope you're ready to bring your laptop to the retirement home and keep recording these with me while we put our dentures in for 30 minutes.
What?